2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the very hot suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for listening to RBN. To see the guest lineup for Studio A and B, please click on the word schedule in the RBN banner at the top of the page at republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest schedule for this program, please visit the radio schedule page at spingola.com, where you will see a list of the guests together with links to their websites. Feel free to join my email list to receive a weekly announcement of the scheduled guest and other special notices. I have linked it to today's date. For questions or comments during the program, email spingola1 at yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna at spingola.com, which I do not access during the program. My second book, The Ruling Elite, The Zionist Seizure of World Power, is now available at Amazon. Just go to spingola.com and click on the image of the book to take you to Amazon. I do not have a supply of the books yet, but when I do, you may also purchase them from me. We will take calls in the second hour after the first break at 800-313-9443. Bill from Idaho called in yesterday and asked that I have Carl back on the program really soon. Therefore, my guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Welcome to the program.
Welcome back, kind of thing, I suppose, isn't it? As of yesterday.
Yes, this is great. I had some email questions after the program was over.
Oh, okay.
And so we need to address those. And then we had some from some of the callers, so some of the listeners called in. And
okay.
One of the questions was, you mentioned a book in the second hour, later in the second hour, on the technical history. And I failed to jot down the name of the book or the author.
The technical history.
Do you happen to recall what that might have been?
The technical history.
Yes.
Not sure about technical history, but I mentioned, was it in relation to ritual murder and the ritual of the curses?
I don't know. Reckless Rites, Purim, and Legacy of Jewish Violence by Horowitz.
That was one. I mentioned another one. It's part of a trilogy. I'd say a kind of modern trilogy of three books, all published between 2007 and 2008 by Jewish scholars who are specialists in Jewish history in various areas. One of which is Eliot Horowitz. Which I might add, within 6 months, there was a book by a settler attacking him as an anti-Semite for writing that book, which I happened to notice when I was looking at reviews of it on Amazon after I'd got my review copy. The other major sort of breakthrough book in the field was Israel Yuval's 2008 Two Nations in Your Womb, Perceptions of Christians and of Jews among pagans and Christians from antiquity to the Middle Ages. I think the other one was Eliel Toef, which might be where you got technical from, given my accent. That's Blood Passover, a very famous book on the ritual murder trial of a bunch of Jews in Trent in Italy in 1475. I say epoch making because all three of these books taken together offer rationale for the Jewish ritual murder hypothesis in many respects.
Okay. Alrighty, we do have to go to a break. We will be right back with our guest today, Carl Rattle. Stay tuned.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze-Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Radl. That's R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. I do have some other questions from listeners. Did you want to expand a little bit on the previous question about the books?
Say that it's not making because they offer a rationale for things like host desecration, ritual murder, that is, shall we say, it has so long been denied outright that the entire idea that we have a rationale from Jewish scholars is quite amazing in many respects, because only anti-Jewish scholars have ever written on the subject and offered a rationale for it. I mean, in terms of historical one, a good one is the Hebraicist from the 1920s and 30s called Dr. Elish Bischoff, who wrote a lot of books on rabbinics and the Jewish question in general in relation to the Shulchan Aruch, the Kabbalah, the Zohar, and he also wrote quite a lot on the presence of Jesus in the Talmud. In fact, that was one of his first books. And the reason I say it's so ichabod-breaking is because it's never happened before. Never ever have they really admitted it's even possible. But we have three different scholars who, at roughly the same time, came up with the same general hypothesis that you have a situation here that's actually arguable and possible. What that's happened is that you're now seeing a spate of books trying to refute that hypothesis from more orthodox Israeli scholars in particular. You've got one which is due out quite soon, by a collection of authors addressing both Yuval and Horowitz, as well as Toef, trying to argue that what they argue is nonsense, effectively. They're trying to endorse things like Ronnie Pochia, Hizier's hypothesis, which is all ritual murders were down to children just being randomly abducted and then blamed on the Jews, and that kind of thing. So it's basically, it opened up a can of worms, a bit like the Israel lobby did with, the Israel lobby and US foreign policy did with anti-Zionism, because increasingly we're seeing people take a critical attitude to Jewish history. Because the fact there is no more, they can't really hide behind it anymore, because people are saying, well, you're using it as a defense against criticism, so we're going to look at that history a lot in a lot more detail, and we're not necessarily going to believe what you've written about it. I mean, Israeli history is effectively, as I think it was, I can't remember who it was who said it, it might have been, Benny Morris, that the first stage of it, it was a simple denial that Jews could do anything wrong. The next stage of it, which is still the current stage, it's a case of, well, one or two Jews did something wrong, but the Jews as a people never did anything wrong. And it's kind of moving very slowly away from this kind of absolute literalism of the Jews can do no wrong, and sort of we're beginning to see a bit more criticism, even from Israelis, and in the non-Jewish world, you're seeing quite a lot, but it's in journals, it's not in popular literature at all. And given standards, I doubt that's going to really filter through to popular literature for at least 20 to 30 years.
Now, given that Horowitz is a Jewish person and wrote Reckless Rites, is that book fairly unbiased, and really does it divulge the ritual murders?
It doesn't. It talks about ritual murders in passing, but it's mainly concentrated on the issue of Purim and Jewish violence in and around that, but it offers the link directly through which you can make Yuval's argument, i.e. about that it is an actual ritual, and so, but basically, he argues that the idea that Jews are incapable of violence, and that all these historical trials and accounts are not as stupid as Orthodox Jewish history claims, because as he says, there is no contrary evidence saying these things are not real. In fact, we have quite a lot of ancillary evidence from throughout history of Jews attacking Christian parades. And killing Christians, as well as the fact that Jews are fundamentally human, as much as the rhetorical question might be, are they really? it's actually a question that was asked some time ago. But the fact that we're beginning to ask these questions is so important, because it allows us to begin to sort of free up the discussion from all the lies, all the myths that have been used around it. I mean, Cecil Roth, I mean, he takes particular issue with Cecil Roth throughout the book. Basically, he calls Cecil Roth a biased Zionist author. And he's basically saying he's I think Carlo Mattoni wonderfully termed a professional Jew. Someone who uses their Jewishness as their profession.
That's kind of like Elie Wiesel.
Yeah, it's exactly what Carlo Mattoni wanted to emphasize, that these people use their Jewishness as their profession, and any questioning of that or anything to do with it, they take absolute offense to, and they will always respond. It's a bit like the old charity thing, is that does a charity really want to cure cancer? Does a charity really want to stop poverty in Africa? Because if it does so, then, it would cease to have a reason to exist. And since it's got a lot of salaried employees, well, it's kind of open to question in some respects.
Certainly, so that's a good analogy. Very good.
Go ahead,
I'm sorry, don't mean to interrupt.
That's fine. No, I was just going to point out it's just relevant to how Jewish charities work, in that that's exactly what Norman Finkelstein said about the Holocaust industry. If the Holocaust was less important, they would cease to exist. Same with the Holocaust Claims Conference, and so on and so forth.
Sure, the money stream would dry up.
Yeah, and they'd be out of a job.
Right.
And who wants to be out of a job?
All righty. Another email question from yesterday. Did any country or people ever kill all of their Jews instead of deporting them in history? This is from Rick.
Any country? Well, there is the classic example of Estonia in World War II, when we do know that the Estonians did, in fact, get rid of all their Jews. I don't know whether they killed all of them. They certainly got rid of them all, hence the famous Judenfrei diagram, which is a big Holocaust, big proof. They've got this diagram of the Baltic states from Einsatzgruppe, I think it's A, under Dr. Walter Stalica, who said, we have killed this many Jews in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And Estonia, he said, he wrote across it the sort of top of it, Judenfrei. As to whether any country has independently done this, probably. I think the closest you could come is what happened in Alexandria in the Roman Empire. The Alexandrians and the Jews have a very, very long history. And insofar as the Greeks and Jews in Alexandria fought each other for nigh on four centuries. They were killing each other, and you had waves of violence. And it was largely caused by the Jews, who were very insolent towards the Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians. And in the first century, the second century, and the third centuries, there was periodic massive revolts of the Jews. Indeed, the entire reason the Jews went into a diaspora was not so much that there was another Jewish revolt. It was what the Jews did in that revolt. It was because the Jews, if you read Dio Cassius, state clearly they were going around skinning Gentiles. They were opening up their bellies and using their guts as trophies. They were flaying them alive, crucifying them. And, you know, it makes very disturbing reading, and also explains why the sheer violence that the Romans put the revolt down with, insofar as they put it down and they just kill the Roman legions. I think it was under the auspices of Trajan, came in and just literally wiped out anything that was Jewish in the area, and then immediately sent the commander who had done it to Palestine. And then he proceeded to start putting down additional laws against the Jews, and in fact may well have started killing them, because by this command, I can't remember its name off the top of my head. I think it was Lucius something, and he took a zero tolerance approach to them in general. And then you had the rising under Hadrian, and the fact that Hadrian had to recall all his forces from outer Mesopotamia to deal with the Jews in the middle of a war. And then Hadrian just kept, as Hadrian retreated, for example, he just wiped out every Jewish community in his path, just wiped them out completely, killed them all. That was the solution to a great problem that had been plaguing the Roman Empire for a long time, just wiped them out. And, went from there. In theory, Titus expelled them, although there was the famous case that the Romans killed the supposed author of the Zohar, Rabbi Akiva, who endorsed Bar Kokhba as the son of Star, and then said he was the son of a liar, in a sort of Hebrew word trick. And he sort of flayed him alive. and there's a very famous passage where he said the Shema, and the Romans, of course, didn't know what this meant, and sort of asked him what it meant. He said, I've always wanted to fulfill the mitzvah for honoring God's name, even though I'm going to die and doing so. And he just carried on killing him. And it's kind of come down as a Jewish story, and it kind of plays an awful lot of all these different trials. When you find out the Jews are persecuted, they always recite the Shema, as whatever's going to happen to them happens. And it kind of, they call Kiddush Hashem. Literally, it means sanctification of the word. It's the Jewish concept of martyrdom. And it's a kind of myth, but the Jews do in fact have a concept of holy war. I can't remember the name of it at the top of my hand in its Hebrew form, but effectively involves a kind of aggressive form of jihad. They're allowed to go and attack any non-Jewish group that's persecuting them in the world.
Okay. Fascinating. All righty, we will be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
As business becomes more difficult, control of cash and the ability to borrow becomes critical. Working capital cash is your greatest insurance and guarantee of financial stability in these uncertain times. Equipment leasing allows you to obtain the income-producing equipment that your business needs and pay for it with tax-free, ever-devaluing dollars. Money that you've already earned and paid taxes on should be sparingly used. That is your reserve capital, safety net. We are also able to buy and lease back equipment that you already own and have depreciated, thereby making more cash available for your present-day needs. For a complete, comprehensive explanation as to how this financial truth will benefit your business future, call Bob New Incorporated at 888-639-2621. 888-639-2621. Keep your working capital cash reserves and borrowing capability. 888-639-2621.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault. 20 seed varieties for only $37.95. Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Guest today is Carl Rattle, the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And in your description of the early warfare of the Jews against the Gentiles, you said that they would disembowel them, crucify them, and other really gruesome things. Can you see a similarity between those ancient activities and the way that the Soviet soldiers treated the Germans at the end of World War II when they came into Germany and particularly into Berlin?
Much so, because if you bear in mind, an awful lot of the Soviet propagandists were Jewish. Douglas Reed said in a very famous passage of his book, The Insanity Fair, he said he walked into the propaganda department in the in Moscow, in the central sort of the interior ministry, and he said there wasn't a Gentile face to be seen. And of course, you've got the very famous character of Ilya Orenburg, but there are many, many others. I mean, the head of the Red Army newspaper, the official one, I can't pronounce it off my head, but he was Jewish. He was a Jewish guy, and he was head of it from 1939 to 1945. And he wrote an awful lot of absolute vile things about the Germans and what they'd done, you know, what they'd allegedly done in the East. And you have this sort of increasing level of savagery. This is what they've done to us. We should be even worse in revenge. And the same is very true of the Jews. In antiquity, as well as throughout history, whenever they've rebelled, the brutality level has always been fairly extreme. They're not great soldiers, but they are. They have this tendency to produce outright fanatics who will do things that are fairly sickening to even, I think, even to the what the Chinese were doing to each other at a similar sort of time frame. It's quite disgusting when you begin to read, for example, in the rabbinics, there's an awful lot of talk of what they call informers. These are people who, these are Jews who all they have done is they've gone outside of the rabbinical system, specifically the Kahal system usually, although not always, and they've gone to Gentile authorities and told the Gentile authorities what the Jews or the official Jews or an individual Jew has done. And an informer can even be someone who sought the judgment of a Gentile court before they had permission to do so from a rabbinical court. This usually ended up with the informer involved being killed, but quite specifically, Rabbi Moses Isserles, who is a fairly major rabbi in a rabbinical figure in Poland in the 17th century, and his colleague, a famous Kabbalist called Solomon Luria, said in their response there, both of them, that how this would work is that officially the rabbis wouldn't do anything about it, but unofficially they would be, in quote, attacked by a mob and killed. Well, the way it's usually translated is lynched, but I think killed is possibly a better way of putting it, precisely because they don't specify the method of killing. And if my general synopsis of that part of the world is correct, it would have been fairly gruesome. So having your bowels cut open, that kind of thing, wouldn't be too far-fetched to suggest at all. And that was a fairly common punishment at the time. So yes, you can see the kind of comparison in that the Jews have historically used extreme measures against anyone they perceive to be their opponents. And a great one, actually, is if you ever looked into the Jewish units that were in the U.S. Army, in the U.S. Army, and particularly in the West, these units, who published quite a lot of their own testimonies after the war, wanted to go to Germany because they wanted to rape and kill Germans. That was a stated objective. They wanted to rape and kill Germans, such an extent where you had a division of Jewish troops, or supposedly Jewish troops anyway, who were stationed in Italy, and they were demanding of their commander that they would go to Germany because, in the words of one of them, quoted in Rich Cohen's The Jewish Avengers, he wanted to impregnate a load of BDM girls and then tell them he was Jewish, so they would commit suicide. Lovely.
Wow.
Yeah, so not exactly the most wonderful people in the world when it comes to not seeking revenge for things. In another case, you have Moses Montefiore in the Damascus case. After the Sultan has waived the charge, no, it was never disproved, he demanded that the Sultan allow him to go to Damascus, he was in Alexandria at the time, with a bunch of soldiers so that he could pass judgment on anybody who he perceived to have anti-Jewish attitudes in Damascus, which would have been most of the Christian population, a good portion of the Muslim population, and you would have got a large-scale ethnic cleansing having gone on in Syria had that been allowed to occur.
Oh, and of course we see a ethnic cleansing in Palestine today.
Yes, a much worse one, I might add.
Yes. All righty, we do have to cut to a break. We will be right back with after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
This is an important message from hempusa.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit hempusa.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Today is Carl Rattle. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And we have another question, and this question is from Al in Australia, and he would like to have you comment on the Melanchthon Jews in the United States. And he says that Lincoln was supposedly one, and because his mother's maiden name was Hanks, and Tom Hanks is supposed to be of Melanchthon descent also, as is Steve Martin, Cher, Heather Locklear, and others. And then he quotes some information from the Internet Movie Database that talks about Tom Hanks being related to Lincoln. Do you have any comments about that?
Melanchthon Jew.
Pardon me?
What is a Melanchthon Jew? I've never heard of that one, ever.
I don't know. It's a word that's similar to the Italian word for eggplant, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. There's a couple of major parts of Jewry. One is Ashkenazim, as in Teutonic, literally. Sephardim, who are the literally Iberian or Cephalad from Obadiah, from the prophet Obadiah. And then there's the Mizrachi, who follow a Sephardic Jewish ritual, but at the same time a very, very different group. The Sephardim and the Mizrahim are the big two, or well, they're formerly the big two throughout history. The Ashkenazim are latecomers, and you've got some smaller groups, but I've never ever heard of these Jews. I mean, unless he means Italian Jews.
It's interesting. There is a couple of references to them on the internet. If you Google Mel and John Jew, there is a website, melandjohns.com, and it's a DNA surname project by Dr. Elizabeth Hirschman and Dr. Donald Panther Yates, and they claim that Abraham Lincoln was of Jewish ancestry. And then in another article on that same site, apparently they are part of the Sephardic Jews and the Moors.
They're saying they're Sephardim. I've never ever heard of that particular description, but if they're part of the Sephardim, it's possible, but I kind of think it's unlikely, because to prove that Lincoln was a Jew is going to be very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. Precisely because you're going to get Lincoln's DNA, which is pretty difficult. I think it's fairly difficult to do. Then you also need to substantiate it in terms of it's not a genetic freak, because they do occur. Then you've also got to try and convince Lincoln scholars that's okay. Because as far as I know, Lincoln scholars have never ever suggested he was Jewish. I read the claim that that he was Jewish fairly recently. I haven't had time to look into it yet, but it's possible. But then again, there's always the possibility it could be a hoax. It's like the old Stalin claim that Stalin was Jewish. You have to be really, really careful when someone says an historical person was Jewish, and then they tend to offer quite a lot of different reasons for it. But unless you've got something that's pretty solid, you can't say yes, no, otherwise. Because I'd like to see the evidence, but I'm skeptical at best, I think, at this particular juncture. But as to Sephardic influence in the US, well, most Jews in the US were originally Sephardic. Insofar as the Sephardim were the major group in Jewish history, and to a large extent still are. They were the great merchants. These were the same Jews who, for example, Maimonides, Kalor, all these people were Sephardic Jews. You tend to forget that because of the preponderance now of the Ashkenazim, but if you go back, you can see that the Sephardim were largely the powerful group, and it was only because of the Pale of Settlement and the fact that the Sephardim spread out and began to lose their own birth rate, their greater birth rate, that allowed them to expand as much as they did, that the Ashkenazim sort of centered in the Pale, couldn't go anywhere, had huge families, sort of hothoused an awful lot of their children, created a kind of eugenic scenario where they were breeding, like the Amish, a high proportion of geniuses, a high proportion of idiots. And then once that was released, the Ashkenazim just spread like wildfire throughout the world, pretty much. There was some Ashkenazim who got out the pale or the Poland before that, but they weren't in any significant numbers, and there were some Sephardim who came in. But you get a sort of situation where most of the Jews in the US prior to about the 1890s, 1900s were Sephardim, and then you start to get this mass Ashkenazi immigration from the former Russian Empire. And then you have this shift, this significant shift over time, from the Sephardim, who were, to a large extent, much more reserved in how they preferred to operate. Because they had a lot more experience in the world, they were much more, shall we say, of the world, more cosmopolitan. They knew that in order to survive as a people, they needed to be not be seen, they needed to be just part of the scenery, if you like, because they had long experience with fighting Gentiles, and they knew that to win, they needed to be non-existent, they needed to be ghosts. The Ashkenazim had none of that. The Ashkenazim were quite the opposite. They were brash, you know, unforgiving, you know, religious, and the common Sephardi phrase when you see this first wave is that these guys are religious lunatics, because they are so very extremely religious, extremely hardline in their beliefs, but extremely imposing, to the point where they would they would try and put the Sephardim out of business. They would attack Sephardi synagogues because the Sephardis were judged to be insulting them by not allowing them into the front row, front pews of the synagogue, that kind of thing. So you have a kind of switchover in the U.S. and the Sephardim have largely become integrated into the U.S. Unfortunately, but that is the kind of the case. You've got a situation where the Sephardi influence is now disintegrated into nothing, pretty much compared to the Ashkenazim. But it once was as big as the Ashkenazi are now, but they were far more circumspect about it, far more clever about it, because they had had years, they had centuries upon centuries of experience, and all the great, the great Jewish banking houses of the Middle Ages, the early modern epoch, were the Sephardim, as well as the Mizrachi of the Middle East. And those are the Babylonian Jews, the North African Jews, the Jews of Iraq, sort of Egypt, that kind of area, even the Jews of Iran, and so forth. It's just you kind of get this changeover, and people often find it very hard to distinguish between what the Sephardim were and how the Ashkenazim are today. And they're two very different modes of operation. And the Ashkenazim are only now learning, or beginning to learn, that they cannot operate as openly as they would like because of the backlash. And what happened in the 1920s, 30s, 40s was the backlash from the massive Ashkenazi immigration to Europe and North America, as well as Latin America, that began in the 1880s and then carried on at a huge pace until the 1920s, when nations began saying, enough. We've just had enough of these people. They don't contribute. They steal, they thieve, they do, they've got weird religious rituals. They don't want to learn the language. They put our trades out of business, that kind of thing. If you read the Lusk report, which was the first report, American Senate report on Bolshevism in the United States, it goes into great detail about the Ashkenazim and the threat they posed. And it runs to four volumes and about, I think it was 6,000 pages, but it spends an awful lot of time on the Alliance Universelle Israelite and so forth, and talking about the Jewish institutions, the Jewish links of Bolshevism and that kind of thing. And of course, these are primarily Ashkenazi links, in much the same way as you can link the famous Jack the Ripper murders happened to have occurred in every case, very close to Jewish clubs or institutions in Whitechapel in London. Just an interesting little anecdote that people tend to forget when dealing with that kind of subject. That out of all the suspects, for example, in the Ripper murders, the likeliest ones are with one exception, all Jews. The only exception being Francis Tumblety, who was apparently American, or supposedly anyway. It's kind of, you have the situation where you've got these fanatical Jews turning up, causing problems. What do you do? Well, you begin kicking them out. You begin stopping them immigrating. Hence, you get the 1924 laws in the United States. You get the various legislation in Germany. You get legislation in Spain, Italy, Britain. The Scandinavian countries said no. Austria said no. And you get, and even France said no. France doesn't have a Jewish premier, Léon Blum. And he even said, no, we can't have any more because we've got too many as it is, and we run the risk of creating a riot here, because at one point 90% of the student population of France belonged to anti-Semitic groups. Just to give you some idea of the scale of the Jewish problem in Europe at that time, caused by the Ashkenazi immigration.
Can you make any comparisons between that immigration and the immigration of so many other people from third world countries that we are experiencing now in many countries?
Yes, because the laws that were meant to stop the Jews were then abrogated by Jews. And then the Jews, of course, by this time had allied with various different groups, like the Mexicans, the Negroes, and sort of all the sundries, all the sort of detritus of the world, and said, you know, you've got to let all these people in, because and sort of make sure they get into university positions. And the rationale behind it, from a Jewish perspective, was so that we can get in, so that we can get our people in. Because remember, at this time, at the time that they began doing this, in the late 1940s, early 1950s, to the early 1960s, there was a situation where the idea was that Soviet Russia was becoming anti-Semitic, the Soviet bloc was no longer a safe place for Jews, Israel had arrived, socialism had no longer the pull it once had for Jews, but nevertheless, Jews continued to sort of plan their own ideas about it, but wanted to destroy the boundaries that prevented them from becoming a learned professor of psychology, a learned professor of philosophy in the United States, and prevented, you know, a few hundred Jews, for example, from studying at Princeton. A great example is in Kenneth Collins' book on Jews and medicine in Scotland, where he talks of how, because of all the sort of anti-Jewish quotas, which were put against the Jews from studying medicine and various other degrees, that all these Jews began flooding over from the United States to study in Scotland, in the universities there, so that they could then go back and practice in the United States. And he produces, I think he points out that at one point, about 50% of the students at Scottish universities, particularly in the medical faculty, were Jewish. These people were learning in Scotland, then they're going to go back to the United States and practice, and then become a learned professor of so and so forth in the United States, because they had the connection to a reputable university in another country that the other universities would take them on as faculty. But the quota system had been imposed to stop that happening by preventing the rise of Jewish undergraduates and Jewish graduate students in the first place. So effectively, they subverted it by going round, and then by, in their new position as a, you know, a doctor, as a philosopher, as a thinker, or as a, I don't know, as a civil servant, or a, like Walt Rostow, a position where, you know, I'm an advisor to the government, that kind of thing. You should do this because it fits within, because I can rationalize it in my ideology, be it, libertarian capitalism or socialism. So you get, for example, Herbert Marcuse, talking about how, you know, we should allow everyone into the West, and how we're being a big diverse nation because race doesn't matter, you know, nations don't matter because all abstract concepts, that kind of thing. And Walt Rostow talking about, you know, that the sort of a rainbow nation kind of idea, on a sort of, you know, we should all compete against each other, and the best will win out. So you kind of have a situation where the immigration laws that were holding back the tide, if you like, were then destroyed from two angles. One from the conservatives, because you had the pro-capitalist Jews, and then from the left with the pro-communist Jews and the pro-socialist Jews, pro-anarchist Jews, and what have you, all attacking the same law. So it was kind of inevitable that this law would fall. And then with the rise of the National Review, and then the very early on, fall of any kind of criticism of Israel or Jewish affairs in the National Review. I think he stopped it in 1959. Was it William F. Buck stopped it then?
Yes.
Then you just have a situation where the conservatives, a new conservative journal that's, you know, the big one, is the new one that everyone likes, is pro-Jewish, and you have all the left-wing journals like the new Left Review, which most of its advisory committee was Jewish. It was people like, Sol Auerbach, I can't remember his name. There's a couple of them who have now turned into conservative writers, conservative Jewish writers, or have written, or an, are now sitting, in an academic position of great authority in sort of a named chair at, say, Princeton or Harvard, that kind of thing. So you have a situation where you're being attacked from both sides, effectively. And it's kind of, it was almost inevitable what was about to happen, in that there would be a torrent, there'd be a wave of immigration, and you've got a situation you've got today, really. where it's kind of powering itself under its own steam, because these groups are now self-interested in getting as many of their people in the United States as they can, because they become more powerful. The more people they get in, the more powerful they become. Hence La Laza and groups like that. And also, that also means that they can begin lobbying, and means they have less dependence on their Jewish supporters, to the point where the original Jewish-Black alliance that's often remarked on by civil rights scholars is actually disintegrated to a large extent.
Oh my goodness, that is some fascinating history. All righty, we do have to go to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
The author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And with regard to all of this multiculturalism and all of the incoming people from third world countries, now instead of blaming the Jews for the problems in the country, people will blame the illegals and others who have entered the country to work for the corporations at cheaper wages. And also, I believe that the immigrants may also be an issue in today's decision about Obamacare made by the Supreme Court. I think that, you know, there are certain industries that have been impacted greatly by all of these immigrants who have come in that really can't afford to pay for things. And so everything is being, opened up, and the government is taking more control and regulating our lives more. And we'll blame the immigrants.
People blame immigrants. That's true. People blame immigrants, but at the same time, we have to bear in mind who caused this in the first case. Because what do you treat? Do you treat the symptom or do you treat the cause? You always want to treat the cause if you're a medical professional. You don't want to be faffing around with the symptoms. Because if you faff around with the symptoms all the time, they're just going to come back. And the cause, if you look back, is quite clearly that you've got a very, very aggressive minority. And that minority is, 9 times out of 10, Jewish. And the fact that you get one or two Jews who say, oh, I'm opposed to immigration as well. Well, yeah, but the fact that most Jews see as age.com pointed out, I think it was a couple of weeks back, most Jews are liberals. They're not conservatives at all. The conservative Jews tend to be the really religious ones, the Hasidim variants. But they're no friends of the West either, because they basically view Gentiles as being less than human. Possibly the best translation of how they think of them would be as soulless vessels, you know, sort of a creature in human form, but not really human, without the spark of real life, more of an animal than human. It's that kind of problem that you kind of face when you're dealing with a situation like this. Because people say, "Well, I'm going to look at what I see around me. I don't see Jews causing me problems. I see immigrants causing me problems." And it's the kind of thing where you find it here in New York City. You find people who say, "You know, oh yeah, I was unaware that the Jews are like they are until I came to New York City, because of the fact that the Jews here are incredibly aggressive. I mean, it doesn't get generally reported in national news, but you routinely get, you know, a synagogue got a swastika drawn on it. Problem is, despite these security cameras, no one seems to know no one seems to have picked up where this guy came, and yeah, it's just crazy.
Right. Alrighty, we do have to take our 60-second top of the hour break for station ID. We will be right back with our guest today, Carl Rattle. Stay tuned. Okay.